Okay, and welcome to the second hour, and let's just go ahead and pick up where we were. John, you were saying that the truth movement, with the inside job narration that's embedded in it, with its so-called experts, is kind of putting the blame on a particular party, which in this case is the United States government. And you
that's
wanted
right.
to continue on with that thought.
Yes, what I'm proposing, and I hope in the course of the next 10 or 15 minutes to give not an irrefutable proof of what I'm saying, but to give a plausible and solid basis for consideration. What I'm proposing is that the inside job mantra is part of the psyops. It's part of what's confusing us and dividing us. And as Dr. Wood pointed out, the truth movement has, in a way, 9/11 truth movement has, in a way, torn the United States apart. You know? Now, I'm an American citizen, and I consider myself to be someone who loves the ideal of America. And I know that there are many, many things that have been done wrong by the American government, and that there is a criminal element in the American government. You know, I remember when John F. Kennedy was assassinated, and in my opinion, that was a coup d'etat in front of the entire world, and from that moment on, a criminal element began to take over in the American government. But the criminal element is not the entire government. So what the 9/11 truth movement is doing is it is creating a hatred and a distrust of the entire government and the entire structure of the United States, the entire legal and authoritative structure of the United States, which is a terrible thing to happen, you know? And so I think that is an effect of this psyops, and I would like to describe how that psyops was constructed and the purpose for which it was constructed.
I'd like to add something there that also another facet of this is if that is how the truth movement is seen, those who are trying to decide between was 9/11 the story we were given about 19 bad guys and box cutters, or was it something else? And once they see what the truth movement's up to, then they go back to the first story.
There you go.
So it turns them off to questioning the events as well.
That's right. It does. That's very true. So I would like to proceed. I want to proceed with a little disclaimer to the people who are listening, and that is that what you're going to hear now is absolutely and exclusively from John Lash. And I do not expect that my collaborators in this three-way discussion are in any way implicated or support this. So don't think that because they're on the interview with me, they actually go along with this.
But remember that allow us to support you on it if we agree with it as well, John.
If you, that's fine. But please don't assume that Dr. Wood or Thomas Malone are behind me on this, because I've never said this ever in public before. I'm going to give it a try. Let's consider, now that we know, Let's take it and say that Judy Wood has led us to the truth. Dr. Judy Wood's scientific analysis is impeccable and irrefutable. The destruction in New York City on 9/11 was done with directed energy weapons of an unusual kind that are known to exist but are unadmitted and are held in secret by the military. Knowing that, we can go on and ask two questions. Why were these weapons used? This is one question. And the second is, why were they used in the way that they were used? Okay? Now, I've been thinking about this intensely ever since we agreed to have this three-way conversation. And I'm convinced that these two questions are probes that can lead us into the core of the psyops that's been perpetrated not just on the American people, but on the mind of humanity itself by the 9/11 criminals. This can lead us to it. Now, let's look first at why they were used. In order to explore that question, I would just take a minute and ask you all to take a few steps back and consider something that we've learned in the last 10 years. And this is not speculation, folks. This is intensely documented research. We have learned that a certain element within the American government called the neocons, consisting of advisors to the presidency and the military had a plan to create a Pearl Harbor type of event. And we know from the Project for a New American Century and other documents that have been written by the neocons that they look forward to staging some massive event that would be a false flag event, and that this false flag event would be committed in the United States of America, would be blamed on a foreign country, and would give the imperialistic neocon program the green light to go ahead and do what it subsequently did, which is invade Iraq, invade Afghanistan, and pursue an imperialistic power game over the across the world. Now, I use this term false flag operation. How many of us actually heard about that term before September 2001?
Well, I was aware of the term, but I wasn't aware of it on the scale, obviously, that I was after that.
I don't know about you, Dr. Wood, but I'm not even sure if I heard about that term before September 2001. False flag operation.
I didn't hear about it, and I guess because of the people I hang with.
Because of what?
The people I hang with, you know, scientists and engineers and so forth, you know, people who need to see it to believe it.
Right. But actually, you know that term now, and the whole world knows that term. As
right.
a matter of fact, we could say that one of the great features of the mass education that we've undergone since 2001 has been we know now what false flag operations are, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
And we can cite them in history, like Hitler's burning of the Reichstag, like the Gulf of Tonkin event. We know that there are many admitted false flag operations used by the American military and the American government for over a century. We know this now. Gore Vidal wrote a book in which he listed the astonishing number of false flag operations that America, that the United States government or a certain faction in the government has used. And so we've been able to put together the picture that 9/11 was a false flag operation. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They got the idea. We need a new Pearl Harbor. We need some catastrophic event. We need an attack on American soil that will justify the agenda of the neocons and this imperialism of their program, which is well known to many people. Oh, so they're planning this, and this is what they think. Well, let's crash some airplanes into some skyscrapers, okay? And let's aim one at the Pentagon, and maybe even let's aim one at the White House, but we won't actually allow, since we're controlling the false flag operation, we won't actually allow it to hit the White House because that would be too much, but we'll say that some heroic people intervened and brought that plane down. So they're planning to do this, and the question comes up again, why would they use directed energy weapons to do it? Well, if they could do it in some other way, they might have done it in some other way. But when you think about it, and it doesn't take too much thinking and some basic common sense here, it would have been incredibly difficult to bring this off using actual hijacked airplanes. Incredibly difficult. First of all, just flying the airplanes, they would have had to have expert pilots to fly the airplanes. Okay, so they could remote control the airplanes. Yeah, but even so, if they were hijacked airliners with people in them, this gets very, very complicated. So what did they decide to do? They decided that they wanted to do that kind of scenario. Let's call it a four-hole scenario. They wanted to leave two holes in the Twin Towers, a hole in the Pentagon, and a hole in the ground in Pennsylvania. And that would be the multiple false flag attack. They would blame it on Islamic fanatic Muslim hijackers. And they would use that to launch their wars. Well, in order to do that, they sat down and they talked to their, their closest advisors, and their closest advisors said, listen, if we try to do this literally with airplanes and guided missiles and things, it's going to be very, very hard to control. But there is a directed energy technology that we can use to do it, and we can fake it. We can make it look like it's airplanes, but we can use the directed energy technology instead, and it will be infallible because we can really control it. And that way, it's going to be just a few people that have to know about it, because if we're going to do it with airplanes and hijack airliners with people in them, no, we can fabricate all that, which has largely been done, you know. If you go back and look at the evidence, it all falls apart. Who were the people on these airplanes? What, you know, it becomes very, very suspicious. So let's just cut to the chase here. They decided that they would use directed energy weapons, which could be in the possession of the American military or could be in the possession of certain allies or alleged allies to the American military. And with directed energy weapons and with simulation devices, such as cloaking of airplanes and things like this, which the military all also has, they pull off this false flag attack. So that's why they did it. They had a good reason. But there's a real problem with that explanation. And that is, why did they have to destroy the two towers and create the massive evidence of directed energy weapons at the site in New York City? Why couldn't they have just created, put in four holes?
Because I have the answer.
Yeah, tell me.
Here, by somebody, the first responders. It was unbelievable. Everyone was in such disarray. It was all unbelievable. It's like their world had been turned upside down.
You're saying they had to do something that was not just a false flag attack that was in the scale of human belief and comprehension. They had to do something that was an attack beyond the scale of comprehension.
It was because look at Hollywood.
Right.
People are used to seeing stuff on Hollywood. You had to outdo Hollywood.
Right.
It wouldn't have the emotional impact if sufficient enough to provide the reasons for the reason they did it.
But let me get back to my evidence.
Yes.
If it was some airplanes or something like that, you know, what I know about the evidence is that even the remnants of Building 6, when they went to take that down, just that little chunk at the end, they had to pull it down with a cable because if they stuck dynamite in it, they were afraid of damaging the bathtub wall. So, you know, if you have a piece of a jet, you know, falling down the bathtub wall or whatever, you're going to undoubtedly end up having flooded Lower Manhattan. If those buildings tipped over, you take out several other buildings. It was too messy.
But suppose it was not necessary for a false flag attack that would justify invading Iraq and invading Afghanistan. Was it really necessary just for that purpose to bring down, or not to bring down, excuse me, here I go again,
to completely
dustify those buildings and demonstrate more of the directed energy weapons with WTC-7 and the coring out of Building 6 and so forth? Would it have been necessary to go that far?
So you're saying, John, that to reach the ends that they wanted to reach, they could have done it just with the so-called hijacked airplanes, and that would have been sufficient, sufficient force. And you're saying, why did they have to go to this farther extreme?
Exactly. Talk about Hollywood. I think it would have been quite sufficient to simulate two jetliners hitting the World Trade Towers, which they did, and to simulate one hitting the Pentagon, and to then make up another heroic story about one that was brought down by passengers, which story is absolutely full of holes, to simulate all that in order to make the point for a case of a false flag attack. But it went far, far further than that. Why? What I'm suggesting, and this is just a suggestion for people to think about, is that the PSYOPs had two parts. One part is that it was an obvious false flag operation. And whoever pulled off 9/11 wants the world to think that that's the end of it, right there. And that's why the controlled demolition people are playing into that scenario, one way or the other, as Dr. Wood said. One way or the other, they're playing into it. Because the people who don't believe them have to go back to the Arab hijacker scenario. So it creates an absolute double bind for the mind. But when you set that aside and you say, wait a minute, if the false flag operation, which was actually planned and perpetrated by the American government, was actually incorporated into another operation that was much, much bigger. And it's because of the other operation that the buildings had to be dustified in a science fiction spectacle of magic in front of people's eyes, and the WT-7 had to be dramatically made to disappear when it did. That's the second part of the psyops. So there are two parts. This is what I'm getting at. Am I making any sense here?
You're making sense. I want to hear more about this, yes.
I disagree with, being separate events or separate psyopses. Or I don't like to make a division. I think it was one big plan, and the cover-up or whatever, you know, the bombs in the building cover story was just a spin version of that. It as for a cover story. What I've seen in it is that, you know, 3 + 1 = 4. Three buildings, one in the ground.
Right.
Otherwise, you'd be safe if you stayed out of big buildings. You stayed out of the Pentagon, you stayed out of New York City. But the fourth one is, it could happen to you anywhere. You're not safe anywhere.
Right. Right.
And I saw the same thing with a 7-7. You know, three in the tube, one in the bus.
That's right. You're not safe on the bus either. Yeah.
It's
airplanes, and that's why we have TSA doing what it's doing now, which is a continuation of violence. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I agree, Dr. Wood. I think it was all part of one plan, but what I'm looking at, and I'm just asking you to look at this with me, is that the first part of it was that the whole plan was not known to the people who perpetrated the first part of it. This is what I'm
suggesting. Oh, no way. No way. I think only, you know, a small handful of people knew what was going on. But the people who follow below, so compartmentalized, just do their job. And they don't know why they chose a particular day to do this exercise or, you know, where they're having a meeting. That's just what ended up happening. They didn't stop to think of why. But things get done a certain way, and you don't, you know why you have a certain opinion at the end of the day.
Well, I think that things get done a certain way. In this case, that 9/11 got done a certain way because the people who did it want absolutely to conceal who they are. They absolutely want to conceal who they are. And what I'm saying is that if we deconstruct the way the psyops was laid down, we may be able to figure out who they are. And I am looking at this now very, very closely in terms of the narrative that was fed to us and the way the psyops was planted in our minds as to how it was constructed. And I think that at this 10th anniversary of 9/11, this is the thing to be doing. Because let's face it, I mean, people have been talking about a false flag attack. 9/11 was an inside job. 9/11 was a false flag attack. And unfortunately, the people who are saying that are still inside the psyops. They're inside it. They're speaking from inside it. And we've got now, after 10 years, we've got enough distance in time. Maybe the trauma's worn off enough and the confusion is worn off enough for us to step back and say, wait a minute, the only way we're going to see how this psyops is working on our minds is if we get it out of our minds, you know? And I think that the inside job mantra is part of the psyops. It was planted in there in the beginning. It's planted in there to conceal who were really the masterminds of this event. And the masterminds of this event are not necessarily the people who are framed for what they actually did.
But it could be.
It could be, but I have a feeling that it's not. I have a feeling that the criminal element and the neocon fanatics / criminal mafia in the U.S. government, the Bush-Cheney gang, were tricked themselves by the ultimate masterminds of this 9/11 event. Because the ultimate agenda is not just the neocon goals. What if the ultimate agenda is not just the neocon goals? What if the ultimate agenda is something much, much wider, perpetrated and orchestrated from a different location? This is what it's beginning to look like to me as I am in my initial stage of deconstructing the psyops.
So, yeah, Dr. Wood, I want to get your comment on that in a second. But, John, could you, what would be a possibility of what that end desire or end target of these masterminds would be?
Well,
is it just a way to kind of screw with the minds of the whole planet?
Or don't fool with us. See what we can do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, what is the end objective of the masterminds of 9/11?
Right.
To destroy humanity as such, and because they don't believe that they are a part of it. Now, who would that be? Can you think of anyone who openly states that they're not a part of humanity? Well, anyway, put that on the fridge to think about in the morning. But their goal would be to openly destroy humanity and take possession of the planet as if it had been given to them by a divine mandate. Now, who would want to do that? I'm not saying who, but I'm just saying that that's how big the agenda is behind 9/11, as far as I can tell from my mythological and historical analysis.
I'm with you on that completely, John. Dr. Woodward, you seem to indicate that you feel it's more of a one seamless job there. How do John's thoughts echo in your mind right now?
Well, I guess I'm not trying to go to who did it that easy, because I fear that that is an escape as well. That, you know, if the walls start closing in too much on certain individuals. Oh, we didn't do it. See, E.T. did it.
Right.
The devil made you do it. That type of excuse. And that's why, you know, humanity is capable of this technology. There's no question of that. But and there are people who are that evil. A lot of people have trouble seeing that.
Mm-hmm.
But, what are, pathological murderers? They don't act like humans. But there's, another thing, of course, this could be part of the cover story, is the buildings were destroyed in a way such to do a massive demonstration to the world, like a huge display, but with damaging the least amount of surrounding buildings.
That's right. That's right.
And, that could be a cover for, you talk about... somebody framing somebody else, framing themselves.
That's right.
And they're really guilty. You don't know who.
That's right. But I would say this, Dr. Wood, I'm also trying to be cautious. It's difficult to be, but I'm also trying to be cautious, and I'm extremely aware of the risk that you just pointed out about jumping and pointing the finger. Believe me, I am. But I would say this, and I think that this is, I'll just say that in my mind, this is unfortunately an inescapable and brutal fact, that there are two things that we must absolutely know if we're going to survive in a sane world, in a sane, humane world after 9/11. One is we must know how to use that technology that was demonstrated for good. And the second is we must know who uses it for evil. We must know. It is in the nature of the human animal. Is it in the nature of the human species? You know, there have been stories of people who say a guy came home from work in California in 1974 and found his whole family murdered, you know, in his home, right? And he spent the rest of his life to find out who did that. And we need to spend the rest of our life to find out who did this. And it's just, it's dangerous. It's dangerous, I know. But it's more dangerous not to know who did it.
Mm-hmm.
And the point that I want to make is that the people who did it are using everything they've got to conceal themselves, because their power lies largely in secrecy and deceit. And 9/11 is a challenge for the human race to stand up in a war against secrecy and deceit. And so there are, that is the challenge presented by 9/11, and I'm trying to address it in my way now by introducing a kind of loose, very flawed deconstruction of how the PSYOPs was set up. Because the event was set up in such a way that every subsequent aspect of it would conceal who they are. And bringing them out of concealment is going to be more than half the battle.
I guess where I'm coming from on this is that it's sort of like by decriminalizing it, you can find more information. It's sort of that approach, in that if you're into revenge and looking to get somebody from revenge, they're going to keep covered up even more. Mm-hmm. But if you instead focus on the good, focus on developing this free energy, you might get somebody stepping out of the closet more. Or somebody said, well, somebody talked me into operating this gizmo this day. Does this gizmo have anything to do with what happened? You know, that you might get that happening.
This is true. And again, I totally concur with you on that caution. And I wish that I could simply come down on the side of the positive side. But the fact is, first of all, I'm not talking about going for these people for vengeance. I'm just talking about knowing who they are. Once it's known who they are, then we'll see how the vengeance scenario plays out. But, you know, vengeance is inevitable in the human equation. Mm-hmm. Vengeance is inevitable. It's not a good motive, but sometimes it is the just and proper response when the full truth of the situation is known.
Revenge might not, you know, it doesn't really solve the problem.
No, I didn't say revenge. I said vengeance.
Oh.
No, it doesn't solve the problem. But if
to isolate it.
I'm not making a case for vengeance here, by the way. So let me try to clear that up. I'm making a case for is, can we, by deconstructing the PSYOPs and seeing how the events of the day were arranged along with the narrative of those events, can we from that go to the perpetrators? Can we go to the identity and detect the perpetrators? That's what I'm suggesting. Then when we do that, we'll see what happens next. I'm not suggesting we do that for vengeance. I'm suggesting we do it for the sake of truth. Wouldn't you like to know who did it? Who planned
it? That's why I took the people who know who did it, that's why I took them to court.
And you are the only person, I want to point this out to people who are listening here. Many people are accusing everyone from the Eskimos to the Chinese to you know who of 9/11. You're the only one who's actually done anything about it and taken concrete and reasonable steps to find out.
That's right.
Well, we know who did it. Why don't we go ask them?
That's right. And you didn't do that, Dr. Wood. I'm pretty sure I can say this. You didn't do that in the spirit of vengeance, did you? You did that in the spirit of wanting to know the truth. Okay?
Yeah, right. And wanting to know, why don't you share that with the rest of the world, you know?
That's right.
If it stays in secrecy, it stays in power and control over us.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever holds these weapons and whoever used them from 9/11 is alive today, or their heirs are alive today, holding these weapons as we speak, and they have the capacity to hold the entire human race hostage. And I don't like that. I don't want to be held hostage.
I kind of think that's what happened to the legal case. I mean, think about the judges in this case. Would they, you know, do you think they'd last in the first day if this went forward?
But you see, we can't live like that on this planet anymore. I will not live on a planet where I am subject to extortion, where my life is threatened because I'm going to say the truth, where I am being threatened and menaced with murder or worse. I will not live that way. I would rather be dead than live that way. And I think there's a lot of people who share that sentiment. And I think, Thomas, you're on the top of the list.
I was just going to put that in my own voice. Yes, exactly. I'm totally with you on that. Yeah.
I guess that's why it is why I went after ARA to find out, you know, I wanted to put them under oath to ask them who did it. Whose technology is this?
Well, you know, Dr. Whitty, it's amazing to me. I mean, you amaze me, not only for your genius and the sobriety of your mind with which you've handled this immense question, this immense riddle, but just, you know, the sheer guts of what you did. I mean,
absolutely. Absolutely.
Very few people know that you even did that. And would you like to tell now the people listening what you told me that the judge said to you when you walked into the courtroom?
I've been hesitant to say it out loud because I don't want to put any judges in jeopardy, but people know who the judges were. One of them said something like, "Y'all have a death wish?"
Y'all have a death wish. Well, I guess we have a death wish. I don't know. If loving the truth and wanting to live in a world that's free of being terrorized by some maniacs with the ultimate weapon, you know, if that's a death wish, then I must confess that I have a death wish, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't look like a death wish to me. It doesn't feel like a death wish to me. It feels like the breath of freedom in my lungs. And this is a horrible situation. Whoever has these weapons is holding the whole human race in hostage and very possibly blackmailing and extorting the most corrupt elements of the United States government in such a way to destroy the entire government for the people.
This was the feeling that I had gotten with NIST. You know, NIST, to me, didn't feel like the enemy. They felt like, it felt like, They were sort of held hostage by something else, some other entity, some other organization, some other, you know, something. And they just had their hands tied.
Right. Maybe, and that doesn't make them guiltless because they're still accessories and accomplices. And,
right.
But nevertheless, in the bigger picture, as we try to construct how this event was arranged, how it was orchestrated, and how it was set up, so that the truth of who did it would never come out. This is what we look at. The PSYOPs was set up so that the truth of who did it would never come out. And we can overcome that PSYOPs, and we can see who did it. When we see who did it, we'll deal with them then. But until, as long as they remain behind secrecy and deception, the whole world has to live under a shadow of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to live in fear.
I see an analogy to, a woman who's been raped. You know,
mm-hmm.
Should she go tell somebody or shouldn't she? If she
mm-hmm.
if she keeps it a secret, she's protecting the perpetrator. She's holding secret his crime.
That's
but
exactly
being
right.
Being able to talk about it is to free herself from that prison and to not keep that guy's secret anymore.
That's a good analogy. It is a good analogy. And I think that what's happening, you know, I've heard a number of people, just like recently, you said it strangely, but it's in the last few days, but it may continue, saying that, you know, they're just fed up with living under fear and living with lies all the time. And the challenge of 9/11 is to raise ourselves up to the point where we have the courage and the sobriety to break through that spell of fear and deceit and see what's really behind it. And, the prize of it is free energy. That's the prize. There's a prize in this horror, a great
prize.
But
we also have to look at what free energy means. It's a total change in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. in our economy, in our education, in every aspect of our life, especially in the area of commerce and economy, because it levels out the playing ground, and it gets us out of the drama of false scarcity, and it gets us out of the control of corporations. It makes everyone, gives countries the ability to claim back their sovereignty, completely changes the game all across the planetary social network.
Here, let me interject something here, which I've recently found quite intriguing in the so-called truth movement. Those who have attacked me viciously for the longest time, I'm talking about going back to early 2006, with my billiard ball thing, when some folks saw it, they put it up on their website. They thought, you know, here's concrete evidence that can wake people up about, you know, the timing issue. And then right after that, they get an email from someone saying, you're going to discredit yourself because Judy Wood's been debunked. That's just nonsense. She's totally unscientific. And the person will quick take it down. This would happen one site after another. And I didn't know who was doing this, and I later came to know. And there's a few other henchmen like this in the top ranks of the truther movement. Come to find out, these people, yes, they have PhDs. You would believe what their PhDs are in. Awful lot of them in chemistry, in chemical engineering.
Oh, really?
Or degrees. One of them has a bachelor's degree in chemical engineering and then a law degree. But quite a few of them have PhDs in chemistry. Petroleum.
There you go. There you go.
And they're in the petroleum industry.
That's right. That's right.
That's an interesting coincidence.
It really is. So if there were free energy devices available and each country could develop their own in their own way, suitable to their own natural resources and their needs, then the master game that uses oil and that is very closely related to wars, you know, wars for oil, that uses oil as a form of
control
would collapse in a moment. You see, the whole game would collapse, and so anyone who has a dog in that race is going to be likely, if they put their selfish concerns to the forefront, is going to be likely to do treacherous things in order to keep that game going. There are one of the terrible things that I reflect on a lot is that even when we discover, and I'm getting a feeling that the moment is due, who actually perpetrated this and how they did it and why at 9/11. That's only the tip of the iceberg. It's going to take...
Maybe those covering it up are a good indication.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't necessarily show the connection to who did it.
Right.
Yeah, 'cause different people benefit. Like those who did the looting in New Orleans, you know, didn't necessarily fabricate this hurricane,
mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
But still, you know, they're covering it up for a reason, and that is a crime in itself.
That's right. The crime of the cover-up is almost equal to the crime of the horror that was perpetrated, and it's going to take generations to sort out who the accessories were, and the accessories and the accomplices are many, but the key thing is, who was command and control of this event? Who gave the orders? Who set up the devices? Who has the devices right now as we speak? This is something that humanity has a right to know. And every single person who wants to live on this planet in a free and happy way can benefit when we know that. We can only know that by deconstructing the psyops that they've embedded into our minds.
Mm-hmm.
Once we're free of the psyops, once we're liberated of the psyops that they planted in our minds, it will be obvious who did it. This is my view.
Can I work in something here that ties into the part of the psyops? Is where does the $2.3 trillion that was reported missing the day before 9/11 tie into this?
Yeah, well...
Is it real? Is it a story or is it real?
Yeah, that's the first question to ask, yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's say that it's real. Let's just assume that it's real. than, let's say, it was a payoff.
To pay off the start of the truth movement? So I'm sorry, I just couldn't help that.
Well, it could be a payoff, a blackmail payoff, but they did it anyway.
Yeah, it's a blackmail. It's a payoff. You know, every crime. These are crimes like mafia crimes. Go back and watch a few good mafia films and look at the way that they do things. You know, there's always a payoff at the beginning of a big event, a big crime, because everybody involved has to get paid off, and then of course they go around afterwards and kill a number of them off because they don't trust anyone in their own ranks. But it would not be at all implausible that there would be a massive payoff attached to a blackmail operation attached to this event.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to introduce to people's minds now who are trying to understand 9/11 the concept that it involved a blackmail event. But the people who were blackmailed, namely the Bush-Cheney gang, actually did what they were blackmailed for. So it's a very strange twist. But there was a lot more to the bargain than they expected, you see. Let's say they made a bargain with the devil. Mm-hmm. And the devil said, okay, I'll do this for you. I'll give you the technology, and since we handle security very well, because that's our specialty, we'll make sure that nobody knows what's going on, because we'll lie and deceive, and we'll turn off all the cameras, you know, and we'll make sure it works as long as you pay us off big money. And that was the deal that was cut. And then the diabolic people who did this went way, way beyond what was necessary for a false flag attack, because they have another agenda which uses the United States as an instrument of their ultimate objectives. Now, what if that's how it's set up?
I can find no fault with that scenario in my mind right now.
I tend to think it was this was the game plan from the start.
And by the way, I'm not trying to get the criminal elements in the American government who were complicit in 9/11 off the hook. Please don't read it in that way. I'm just saying that they are guilty as perpetrators, but they were in the game of bigger perpetrators.
But I have a feeling there's a lot of people who, like NIST, they weren't necessarily doing it, but they you know, okay, here's an example. This is how I met Andrew Johnson. Stephen Jones asked Andrew to splice these two videos together. He didn't ask why. He figured Stephen Jones had a good reason for it. So he went ahead and did it. You know, he thought he was, you know, helping the cause. This is in 2006. And
right.
In an article I wrote up about, you know, Stephen Jones having this spliced together video, that because this is the liquid stuff that pours out the window. It didn't pour out the window just before the tower went poof. There was a bunch of time in between. And
right.
That time was removed, and those two segments spliced together to make it look like the stuff poured out the window and the building went poof. But I noticed that Stephen Jones does not do it himself. He has somebody else do it. And people think that they're doing a good deed. They're helping the cause. They don't think twice about it. Until after the fact, then go back and say, wait a minute, I got hoodwinked in that. They don't realize it at the time.
Well, some people realize that. Yeah, some people never do realize that.
And so, you know, how far up the ladder do you go, or how far back do you go as to who is, you know, innocent, naive, and just doing their job? And then after the fact, it starts eating on. They say, wait a minute, I happened to push this button at this time. And, you know, they start wondering why they did it. And I wonder how much, you know, because Stephen Jones has done a fairly good job keeping his hands clean,
mm-hmm.
having other people, like even the quote of, it takes five times the Earth's energy output to destroy the towers. He
mm-hmm.
never claimed it as his own calculation. He always cited somebody else's calculation. And just like Jim Fetzer starts up all sorts of rumors about me, but he gets other people to state them so he can quote them. And then he claimed he was just quoting them, and he didn't. They keep their hands clean. And so if you look at that type of thing with the whole operation, wouldn't it make sense that it was somebody who kept their hands clean and somehow was able to psyops others into, you know, turning this knob, pushing that button, whatever.
That would make sense. That would really make sense. And that is a very high, a very sophisticated form of treachery. And it's very skillful. And it would make a lot of sense.
If you look at the truth of movement, it's the same thing. These people believe strongly in what they're doing. Some of them are waking up. But they believe they're doing a good deed, and what they're doing is covering it up, covering up the crime.
That's right. Unwittingly.
And they don't realize it.
And they don't realize that they are. That's right.
Well, it sounds to my ears that you're both saying the same thing, just in slightly different terminology. And John, you were going into a point there a little bit ago where you were saying if we found out who did it, that even if we find that out, that would be just the tip of the iceberg, and that you're indicating that there's something even beyond that.
When we find out who did it, and the world...
Well, if you find out who did it, they haven't aimed at you, and that's the last you know.
That's right. When we find out who did it, that'll certainly be a great moment of liberation for the human species. But after that, it's going to be an enormous cleanup job, because once it's known who did it, then people are going to be able to look around at every sphere of life that they're in, politics, the media, government, military, education, and they're going to be able to see those people who were accessories to it, either wittingly or unwittingly. And that's going to be a lot of accounts to sort out. And I'm not a person who's here preaching revenge, never. Vengeance, well, vengeance has its place. And vengeance will have its due in this scenario if the truth comes out. There's no way you can avoid it because it's inherent to human nature. It's natural to human nature.
Of course, yeah. Once we find out who did this and what the agenda was, yeah, the natural response is to eliminate that or take care of it. Yeah,
we can sit back and have a laugh and say, oh, well, finally we caught you. You really pulled one on us, but you know we see it now, and it's all over, and we forgive you, and let's all go out and shake hands
and have a pizza. Yeah.
No, here's a different thing that light bulb just popped on here is, the Haida lived on those two main islands for somewhere between 10,000 and 15,000 years, so I understand.
That's right.
And they didn't mow down each other. They didn't mow down other cultures. They just live
That's
within
right.
their means. And
That's
let's
right.
say we end up having that. It's a totally different type of life. It's no, this issue of control, you know, he who controls the energy controls the people. But if we
right.
don't have that issue with energy, we don't need a control structure. If there's no control right. structure, then whoever has this gizmo cannot have control over us.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
That's a huge point.
That's a very good point. In fact, when the knowledge and use, knowledge and access of that technology comes into this world, and that is possible now, especially with your work, Dr. Wood, pointing to its existence in the minds of many people now, it changes the rules of the game so radically. But at the same time, you know, these perpetrators are not going to walk away with, their tails between their legs, excuse me for saying so, and that is something that will have to be faced when the moment comes, what to do with them, you know? They won't just say, oh, you've got a great world, you've got the free energy now, we're just going to leave you alone. It ain't going to happen. They wouldn't have gone as far in their menacing, odious, hateful destruction as they've gone, if they were the kind of people who would turn around and walk away when they're exposed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just trying to be realistic here. You know, I'm not trying to beat the war drum and get anyone on the revenge trail. But I am saying it's natural. It's a natural inference of your work, Dr. Wood. I have to say so. It's a natural inference of your work, although your work does not say who. People really want to know who when they read your work.
Here's another thing. I guess I keep focusing on the positive because if we have, for example, I worry about people at NIST. They have a gun to their head. They're afraid to speak out. They, you know, their job is to give the answer that somebody told them to get. Fired it. That's the answer. Okay, I'll figure out how to jimmy my model in order to get that answer. And that's what we're taught in our educational system, too, is how to get the answer in the back of the book. But
that's
if
right.
The control structure is no longer there, if they don't fear losing their job, if it's a different structure altogether, they're more free to say, oh, it was that guy who told me to get this answer. And
right.
The control mechanism comes off and more information comes out as a part of this new civilization.
I think brilliant. I like very much what you're saying there, and I think that is not wishful thinking. I think it's very plausible that it could happen in that way. And certainly you're right. Those who now are under pressure, are under threat, who cannot speak, would not be so threatened in that future alternative scenario. You're absolutely right.
And as the lid gets gradually lifts off, we're going to have a huge readjustment of things. But if the game is no longer about a top down control issue, and it's all about a contributory kind of establishment
exactly.
instead of a control.
That's right.
I think it helps take care of itself. Yeah, you find the malfunctioning person and they get isolated. Maybe get put in a cage someplace where they can't hurt anybody again, or whatever the scenario is.
What do you say to that, Thomas?
Well, yeah, and I think once that environment is set up, that more of this the real truth of what has actually happened and who is behind it. Once that door starts to become opened, it's much easier, like Dr. Wood has just said, to allow people to come out and say, "Hey, I just did what I was told to do." That it could all unravel in a very, very quick matter of days or weeks. You know,
it could indeed unravel very fast. Yes. So. That's the threshold where we stand, really. I mean, we look, to me, the 9/11 is really a threshold, and we stand on that threshold, and we look at what lies beyond it, you know, both the positive and the negative, if you want to call it negative.
Living in fear and running for cover and giving up more freedoms, it's like giving up your life.
It is, really.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get it back.
No, you don't get it back. Don't get it back.
The truth will set you free.
Absolutely.
What has been said, the truth will set you free.
Now, we have kind of a final question here. We've already gone into it quite a bit already. But before we get into that, there's one thing, now that I have both of your ears here, that I would like to ask that's always been on my mind about 9-1-1, and it ties into the PSYOPs, is how do we deal with... The implants, in a sense, that were put into the media, you know, these things you see all over on the internet with the encodings that were put into The Simpsons and into Hollywood movies, and there's too many of these synchronicities that took place to just write them off as just mere coincidences. I'm just wondering what your two thoughts are on that side of perhaps the PSYOPs.
Well, you have Godzilla climbing the Empire State Building. Or
yeah.
whatever.
King
Kong. You know, the towers were, because they're the tallest in the world, Eiffel Towers and lots of stuff as well. Because
mm-hmm.
the towers were the, you know, for several years were the tallest towers in the world, of course they're going to be seen as the target of America. And, you know, that would be in a lot of things. 911 is, you know, kind of code for emergency or for panic or, you know, dire situation.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, white flags, same thing. There's a lot of different clues, but how you end up putting them together is a different story. And it also, I think there's, if you want to talk about, you know, conspiracy stuff, look into who organized the 93 bombing. Because that helped prepare people's minds to think, well, they tried before, now they succeeded.
Mm-hmm.
It really was a primer for it.
Hmm.
It is what it looked like to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, it would be too unbelievable. Whoever brought this about had to have a lot of psychologists on board who know the human psyche so well.
Hmm.
So I would say, if I could take my turn to respond to that.
Mm-hmm, please.
It's a really daunting and troubling question. All of these coincidences, associations, allusions in the media, allusions in films, predictive scenes in films, in music, in everything you can imagine. Very, very troubling. One thing I would warn about is that if you start going to investigate them, you can really go out of your mind trying to figure them out. And they, in a sense, become a part of the derangement, the general derangement of the human psyche that has been produced due to the impact of this horrific event. I would say this question came up also with Heinrich on the last interview I did on Red Ice Creations. He said, how can it be that there are all these extraordinary coincidences and it seems like this trail of clues has been laid in so many ways? But I would just say this. I don't have an answer to that, a definitive answer, but the human psyche, the collective human psyche, is like an echo chamber.
Mm-hmm.
And it operates... it operates through subliminal cueing devices. This is actually how the human psyche works. And so if you suggest a cue into the human psyche, even intentionally or non-intentionally, the whole structure of the psyche will begin to resonate with that cue in one way or another. So we must be aware of the way the human psyche works, but at the same time, not be swamped and confused by its workings. You see?
Mm-hmm.
We'll only know who was complicit in 9/11 when we know who did it and how they did it in terms of arranging the events of that day. Then we will begin to know one person at a time who in the media was complicit. As you say, Thomas, the whole thing will unravel. The whole ball, twisted, tangled ball, will unravel. And then it will become known. The truth will set us free, and we will know who were the actual accessories. And I have to say, I'm not one of those, and I sure wouldn't want to be one in what's coming in the future if the truth is known.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's only in natural, in human nature, that when that much grief and confusion and harm is caused, that there's going to be a payback.
Or even those who covered it up.
Even those
who,
exactly. Who helped cover it up? Who helped to muddle it up? Who helped to derail it? It's all going to come out in the wash.
It will. The truth will fall on them just as surely as the towers did not fall.
Exactly. And I would also mention who tried to keep your book from being published for many years. Dr. Wood.
Right. You're asking a question? Or?
Well, no, I'm just adding that point that's the spotlight's going to be shown on those people as well.
Right. And those who muddle it up.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of things. We've opened the door on a lot of very deep questions. So let's, in the final minutes here we have, let's go into the big question in a sense of, you know, where do we go from here? How do we make the events of 9/11 into a positive thing for humanity? And we've talked about it a bit, but I would love to hear both of your comments on how to go from here.
The more the truth is known, the more the change can happen. Just imagine, everyone is alerted to look at the picture on the cover of my book and say, is that a collapse? And be honest with yourself. They don't need to speak out loud. And if they realize that free energy technology exists, if everyone around the planet realizes this, then we've won.
Mm-hmm.
Free energy technology can be developed, and once it becomes that it can be developed, who's going to want to outlaw it?
That's right.
You know, people want to control. And so if we figure out how to just live life with that in a very complementary way with each other, And look at the Haida, you know, live like that, where we learn to, you know, we learn about life. We observe how birds migrate south for the winter, and why do they do that? And we can look at how flowers grow. So many different things we can explore and look into instead of running on a treadmill that goes faster and faster and faster, because mm-hmm. that's really not living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look at the Haida and look at the Japanese as well, I would add, from my perspective.
Yes, and many indigenous peoples around the world who have lived in the same way in human scale, who have lived, as Dr. Wood says, complementary to nature and complementary to each other. We can live that way. I use the term divine experiment. It's kind of a grandiose term, but what I really mean is learn from nature, observe from each other, learn together, discover the secrets of nature, draw upon her bounty, and be of mutual aid to each other, enjoy each other, and get along and have a good time. This is what we all want to do. And there are some people who don't want to do that. So they have created this problem, and they have hijacked this technology.
This culture that we have too, it's, you know, as I often say, there's two kinds of people. There's the live and let live, and then there's the kill or be killed.
Right. Yeah.
And they don't mix well.
No, they don't.
And the kill or be killed type tends to take over, and that's what's kind of happened. But if we go back to the live and let live type, then we get to live. We get to experience life. This other, a treadmill, I call it, that we're on, people are so busy working to pay for their house, to pay for their car, to be able to drive to work, to pay for the house, and pay for the, round. When did they ever get to go out and look at the trees?
That's right.
You know, look at a turtle, walking around in the leaves.
Talk to a turtle.
Yeah. And see, look at two cats and how they interact. And how
That's
they
right.
really do communicate. Just yeah. How do they communicate? You know, they know what the other one's thinking. If you have a cat, and when you've been feeling sad, they'll come up and lick your hair or something. They know.
Right.
How do they know? To be able to wonder about those kind of things. But otherwise, you're just too busy, you know, working to buy the house, to buy the car, to work, to
mm-hmm.
round and round. That's not living.
No.
I think that the discovery of free energy is not just the discovery of a technology, but it's really the owning of a part of our consciousness that we've lost, which is a primordial and innocent and pristine part of our consciousness. And we reclaim back that part of our own minds through the recognition of this technology. It has a psychic and spiritual component, if you will, as well as a technological component. And so that is the opportunity. 9/11 is a fantastic opportunity. If anything changes, if the tide changes, that's how it would change, in my view. It would change toward a flow, a great flow toward that opportunity.
I think that's excellent. Exactly. Because we're not really living now.
No.
And we can use this to get back to living life, experiencing life. As I say about life, life is a set of experiences. And if you haven't had many experiences other than, you know, the treadmill, that's not much life.
Absolutely. I think what you two have laid out for us today is a very big step in getting back to that kind of a lifestyle, maybe one that we actually haven't had for thousands of years, if we've ever had it at all. And in closing here, I would like to, on a very practical level, point people who are not up to speed on these two points to get Dr. Wood's book, Where Did the Towers Go?, and to listen to the audio that John made last week called The Challenge to the Crop Circle Wizards. These are two things that you can use to arm yourself with information and with inspiration. So we're kind of at the end of our time here today. And it'd be kind of trite for me to even say thank you to what you two have done, because it goes beyond the scale of words to express my appreciation to both of you. But that's the only words I can say in closing, is thank you very much for everything you've done and for what we have ahead of us. So if you two would like to close with some a couple of words there, please go ahead and do that.
Well, thank you for bringing us together in this format, too. That's wonderful, and letting us share our thoughts. I'd give my website address. The regular website is drjudywood.com. That's Dr. Judy Wood, both four-letter words, .com. And the book site is wheredidthetowersgo.com. No spaces, just wheredidthetowersgo.com. And on the book site, the Where Did the Towers Go site, there's a link I've just recently put up on the menu for shows. And one of the most recent ones at the top has that crop circle video.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone needs directions to get to that, John Lash's crop circle video. That's where it is. Thanks.
Very good. Yeah, and I will put those links up on the when I post this talk as well. John, any final words?
Well, you're the one to be thanked here, Thomas. After all, you're the one who introduced me to Dr. Wood, and extremely grateful for the pleasure of that connection. And we shall continue in whatever way the truth shows us. So thank you both.
Thank
all
you,
right.
Too.
Thank you both, and we will continue with our friendship and with our working together here in the future as well. So with that, I thank you all for listening, and we will call it a day.